Good morning. Today we're continuing to look at the New Testament letter of James. We're going to read James chapter 1, verses 12 to 18. Happy are those who remain faithful under trials, because when they succeed in passing such a test, they will receive as their reward the life which God has promised to those who love him. If we are tempted by such trials, we must not say this temptation comes from God, for God cannot be tempted by evil, and he himself tempts no one. But we are tempted when we are drawn away and trapped by our own evil desires. Then our own evil desires conceive and give birth to sin, and sin, when it's full grown, gives birth to death. So don't be deceived, my dear friends. Every good and perfect gift comes from heaven, comes down from God, the creator of the heavenly lights, who doesn't change or cause darkness by turning. By his own will, he brought us into being through the word of truth, so that we should have first place among all his creatures. Now, when I was training to be a Baptist minister back in the late 1970s, I remember a conversation I had over lunch with my theology tutor. I said to him, if it hadn't been for the devil, Adam and Eve would never have sinned. They would have innocently carried on living in the garden, and the thought of eating the forbidden fruit would never have entered their heads. Oh, said my tutor, that's a very sophisticated argument. I would have said that there was something in Adam and Eve that the devil was able to appeal to. On reflection, he had a very good point. The truth is, some of us blame the devil for far too much, and in the process, we shelve the responsibility ourselves. But the reality is that there is something in each of us, quite independent of the devil, that evil can appeal to. Even Jesus, although he was the Son of God, was very like us. In the temptation stories of the Gospels, we see the devil trying on three occasions to divert him from his mission. He couldn't force Jesus to do what he wanted, but he could put an attractive spin on it. In the Garden of Gethsemane, just before his arrest, Jesus prays to be strong for the ordeal that lies ahead. This time, there's no mention of the devil. Much more interestingly, Jesus says, "Not my will, but yours be done." He was the Son of God, and yet part of him did not want to be obedient. In other words, life is all about making choices, and for us as Christians, choosing to do the right thing. Now, people have always found the language of the Bible difficult on this subject. So one gospel writer will talk about Jesus being tempted in the wilderness, and another will talk about him being tested. Same story, two very different ideas. Testing is a positive word for most of us. Temptation is definitely negative. And testing is an everyday part of life. Schools use tests to see if children are understanding what they're learning. New cars are tested to see how streamlined and fuel efficient they are. Pharmaceutical drugs are years in the making as they have to be tested for any side effects. Some will remember the appalling side effects of the thalidomide drug, designed to get pregnant women through morning sickness, but leading to the birth of children with appalling physical defects. It was a scandal because it was introduced in 1956 without ever being tested on a pregnant woman, and 10,000 children across 50 countries lived to tell the tale. Of course, at the moment, everyone is discussing when it will be safe to come out of lockdown. If you've had the virus and recovered, then you will have some natural immunity, but then the virus may mutate. So until there's a vaccine, something generally stronger than any natural immunity, it may not be safe to return to the old routine. So you have to understand that politicians have a nightmare judgment to make at the moment between lives and livelihoods. Normally, vaccines are years in the making, but efforts are being made to speed this up so that the economy doesn't collapse irreversibly. But what about the side effects of a hurriedly produced vaccine? This is not a simple call, and we must pray for our leaders that they will be granted wisdom. Anyway, back to Jesus. What happened to him was both a test of his resolve and a temptation to sidestep his calling. Put simply, the test was external, the temptation internal. But in life, these things don't come to us with labels on. You are presented with a situation and you have an internal choice about how you will react. Will it provoke a bad reaction from you or a constructive one? In every situation, you will have that choice. Some years ago, I wrote an article for the Baptist Times. Until a few years ago, the Baptist Times was a regular Baptist newspaper. Some of you may have had a subscription in the past. So I wrote what I considered to be a fairly well-considered piece on the tension between dynamic leadership and collective decision-making. A few weeks later, I heard that the principal of my old college was preaching locally. I liked him. He'd written several books and he was a creative thinker. So on the Sunday evening, I toddled off to hear him. We knew each other and nodded as he took his place on the platform. Then during the course of his sermon, he made reference to my article and dismissed it as something written by a 1960s hippie. I think he probably hadn't noticed that I had written it, otherwise he'd have spared my blushes. Anyway, everybody laughed, except for me, of course. I was mortified that he hadn't even summarised the essence of what I'd been saying. He'd just gone for a cheap laugh, and then at the end of the service it was communion, and I was so angry that I couldn't, in all integrity, stay for it. We didn't see each other very often, but for a few years after that I made a point of not speaking to him. I felt uncomfortable with my attitude, and then it dawned on me that I had made the wrong choice. I could have contacted him and asked the reasons why he was so dismissive. He may well have had some good counter-arguments to mine from which I could have learned. But instead, I gave way to the temptation to withdraw, feel sorry for myself, and shut him out. Whenever something goes wrong or somebody has a go at you, that's a test. But there's an inner voice to do with temptation which presents you with options. Hit back, diplomatically clarify their point, or just let it go. Temptation is always related to that inner voice and the choices on offer. So we may all face similar tests and yet react differently. Heat melts candles but hardens clay, and how we react to the tests of life will determine the kind of people we become. So, says James in verse 12, happy are those who remain faithful under trials, because when they succeed in passing such a test, they will receive as their reward the life which God has promised to those who love him. Which brings us to the second strand in these verses. Our tendency to blame other people when things go wrong. James writes, for God can't be tempted by evil, and he himself tempts no one. But we are tempted when we are drawn away and trapped by our own evil desires. In other words, we are responsible for the choices that we make. Now, there is plenty of evidence of learned behaviour in life. One time I saw a two-year-old dancing down the aisle in church with his arms aloft. He'd seen the adults doing it, so he did it too. I suppose I was questioning whether his heart was in the same place as his hands. You see, we learn behaviour from other people all the time, often good habits, but sometimes bad habits. But then often we make excuses for the bad ones. Ah, my dad was like that. It's a kind of subtle excuse. It's not my fault, it was my parents'. Now, there may be some truth in that, but the Bible doesn't dwell on it. Some New Testament writers talk about the world, the flesh and the devil, but that shouldn't be used to excuse our behaviour. James expects you to take responsibility for the choices you make. But we are tempted when we are drawn away and trapped by our own evil desires, says James. Yet we're always looking for other people to blame. The serpent tells Eve to try the forbidden fruit, and then Eve encourages Adam to try it. That evening, God notices that something has changed. They are hiding their nakedness. Have you eaten from the tree? He asks Adam. Well, yes, but only because that woman made me. So Eve, what have you done? Well, it wasn't me, it was the servant. So who made the servant and who made the tree? Ah, must be God's fault. Adam and Eve will admit the act, but they will not confess responsibility. And that's why it's important on Sunday mornings that we have prayers of confession, not prayers of admission. We take responsibility for the people we are. Years ago, my dad was talking to someone who'd just come out of prison. In the small talk that followed, my dad asked, so did you get mixed up with the wrong kind of people? No, said the bloke. I was the wrong kind of person, and other people got mixed up with me. Good for you, said my dad. You're halfway there. Motivational speakers will often say, are you controlled by the past or the future? Are you a victim of what's happened to you or driven by what you want to achieve? Paul wrote to the Roman Christians and said, don't let the world around you squeeze you into its own mould, but let God remake you. And when he shared his testimony with the Philippian Christians, he said, "Forgetting what is behind and straining towards what is ahead, I press on towards the goal to win the prize for which God has called me heavenward in Christ Jesus." And the promises of the book of Revelation are always to the overcomers. So may we be given insight. May we consider our choices carefully. May we accept responsibility for what we are and embrace the challenge of what we could become.